Welcome, everyone. This is course number three, module number three in our larger course, Building Blocks and Services of the SharePoint Platform. This one is a deep dive into lists using the REST API. My name is Scott Hillier, and I'm here with Andrew Connell. Let me take a minute to introduce myself, since this is the first time I'm joining the course. Again, my name is Scott Hillier. I'm a Microsoft Office 365 MVP. I'm also a developer and a speaker. Author of lots of books on Microsoft technologies, 20 of them, in fact. You can find me speaking at various conferences, like the SharePoint conferences, and I also do classroom training through Critical Path Training. And finally, another way that you might run into me is I'm the community lead for development on IT Unity. So I'm happy to join you for this course and work with Andrew. Andrew, why don't you tell us what we're going to be learning?
So today, again, as you said, this is the third module in this course on the SharePoint platform. And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about a deep dive into the SharePoint list with the REST APIs. So specifically, let me kind of dive in on what we're doing. After a little bit of an intro, I'm going to talk about a little bit of understanding the REST API and what OData is all about, what the REST supported data types are, what the different ways we can communicate with the REST API, how to query data with the REST API. And then before we dive into doing any kind of write operations, such as creating or updating or deleting, I need to talk about something called the security digest or the form digest. And then finally, I'll leave you with a couple of resources to get started. How does that sound?
Sounds like we got a lot of work to do.
We got a lot of work to do. We got just a few slides, a lot of code. It's going to be a good thing for the devs here. I think they'll like it.
All right, sounds good.
So an overview, let's get started with this. But let's find out first, we've talked about this vision slide we've had a few times in the course already. Would you like to give your stab at doing the vision here for us?
Sure. So when we think about the vision, right, one of the messages we're trying to get through over and over and over again is just exactly how all these pieces fit together into the larger vision, which involves extending Office into all of the various products. So, you know, you can see SharePoint, the Office products like PowerPoint, Excel, Delve. Those are all the places where we can have these apps that we're going to write. And we're going to connect to various services in Office 365 as our data store, so we can mash together information that's coming from various Office 365 sources. And then finally, we're going to be able to use the open platform. So really, any kind of tooling that we want, what we're familiar with, what we're comfortable with, to be able to pull all these different data sources together and create the app. So the idea is that it's really a low friction way for developers to get started with technologies that they're comfortable with and standard development patterns.
All right, so after looking at the vision here, let's look at a little bit about what the building blocks are for building apps in SharePoint. We've talked about this slide and some of our other modules within this course, and really what it's showing is all the different pieces of SharePoint that we can take advantage of within custom applications. What you'll see down there in the bottom left-hand corner around the lists and libraries down here in this corner is that's where all of our data is going to be stored if we're leaving it inside of SharePoint. We're not using some external data source. The data is accessible using the SharePoint API, but in our case, we're only interested in the client-side APIs here. And specifically, you know, you get two options, the REST API and CSOM. Now, in another module within this course, we're going to talk about the CSOM, but in this module, we're going to focus on the REST API. So that's kind of where we are in the big picture of all the building blocks. We're looking at the REST API and how we're going to read and write to SharePoint lists. So let's first talk a little bit about what is the SharePoint REST API. This was introduced in SharePoint 2010 just for lists to do any kind of read and write operations against SharePoint list data. It was revamped and significantly improved in SharePoint 2013, where they expanded on the things that we could do with it. We could do a lot more stuff with, like, say, content types and things with, like, all these different pieces within SharePoint, within websites and different permissions and such. But they really expanded on the things that we can do, and they also standardized a lot of the stuff. It's one of two endpoints, as I mentioned a minute ago, between REST and CSOM, of two different things that we can use. And one of the nice things about the REST API is that we can call this, use this from both client-side and server-side based solutions. And that's a similarity what we'll see with the CSOM in a later module. One of the other nice things that we have here is that it enables low-level access to some services that we have within SharePoint. And the REST API is also going to include most of the things that we can do within the CSOM API. There are a few things that the CSOM can do that we cannot do with REST. For example, the CSOM can work with taxonomy or the managed metadata stuff, as well as with the workflow services. And at present, we still can't do that with the REST API. Now, one of the nice things about this is that the REST API in SharePoint, it's really founded on the OData V3 protocol specification. There's work that's on the, in the Office 365 roadmap where they talk about they're moving to V4 support, but it's really founded on V3. And we'll look at what that means as we kind of get into the course. So why should you care about this? Why should you even, what makes the REST API so interesting about this? Well, like I said, it's one of two endpoints. So you have two different choices on when you want to talk to SharePoint from off the SharePoint box, from the client or the server. You can use CSOM or REST. But one of the things you want to think about with the CSOM is that in order to use the CSOM, you have to use one of the available SDKs that's available to developers for where you want to use it. For instance, the CSOM comes in three flavors: a JavaScript flavor that you can use on client-side solutions, a Silverlight solution, and then also a .NET CLR, a managed solution that you could use from like C# or VB.NET for server-side based things. Well, with the REST API, you don't really need anything to talk to SharePoint other than just having an HTTP connection. And we're always going to have one of those, especially if we're trying to compare it with CSOM. Now, another thing with CSOM is that CSOM is going to require you to have some knowledge about how SharePoint works and understand these concepts of things like sites and things like content types and stuff like that. REST, on the other hand, is a web standard. And really, anybody that's worked with a RESTful service, and specifically those that conform to the OData specification, which gives us a general definition of how the how the service works, you're going to be able to hit the ground running pretty quick to be able to start interacting and getting data in and out of SharePoint using this RESTful API. Again, what I said is that the REST API is founded on the OData specification. There's a couple little nuances where it's not a full implementation of the spec, but the way I would approach it, and the way I would recommend that you approach it as well, is that every single time you're going to work with it, think that it's an OData service and go to the odata.org website for all of your documentation on how to write the queries. There's a very few things that just don't work the exact same way or don't work and are not supported, at least today. So let's do a quick little overview of the REST API. It's got a common endpoint. You're going to go to a SharePoint site, and you're just going to slap on a /_API to your URL, and now you're right at the RESTful endpoint. It's going to give you access to SharePoint sites, lists, users, even search, and we'll see that in a later module as well within this course when Scott talks a little bit about the search APIs. It's going to support the OAuth 2.0 protocol for authorization and for using SharePoint app permissions. As you see here on the slide, I got a handful of just a few common endpoints that you would look at. So, for example, if you want to get the REST endpoint for a SharePoint site, this current site that you're on, it's the URL of your site that you're on, and then /_API/web. If you want to get the list inside of that site, you just throw on /list to the, in addition to the URL I just said. If you want to go find a specific list, there's a couple different ways you can do that. There you can get it by its ID. There's some special helper functions that are out there, like get by title, where you can pass in the name. That'll give you a reference to the actual list. And then to get into that list and see all of his items, that's where you're going to put a /items on the end of it, and you'll be able to see it all from there. Now, let me talk a little bit about the REST API and OData. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, the REST API is a concept that was introduced in the 1970s. And I've got a link there to where you can see where it was originated from. It outlines how data can really be exchanged over the World Wide Web to where we can have a specific endpoint, and then we use a tried and true protocol, TCP/IP, and HTTP to be able to issue requests, to be able to submit data, to submit commands like deleting things, all with the verb and the actions that we're defining within the different requests that we're doing. What OData is that while a lot of different companies could take this REST concept and implement their own services that conform to the REST concept, there's no specification, but it's like you would create a service that was RESTful.
The fielding constraints,
Ray Fielding.
Meet the five fielding constraints in order to be considered to be RESTful.
Exactly, yeah, and every company, it was up to them on how they wanted to do that, and then how would you go get the data out? How would you say, I only want 5 of the 10 fields on this one element? Everybody had their own way of doing it.
Right. So it could be RESTful, but it worked the way that you designed it.
Exactly. Yep. It's a RESTful service, but then I need your documentation to figure out exactly how to work with it. What what OData is it's an open, it stands for an open data protocol. And what it is, it's a standard that a bunch of organizations got together and they said, let's create a protocol that has a very defined set of grammar, data formats, both for submissions and responses, and a set of vocabularies for how we can communicate with the service. It also is going to define, let a service be defined as a self-describing service. And so if I go to the endpoint, I can throw on a /$ metadata on the end, and that will simply spit back a huge document that says, here's everything about me. Here's the data types. Here's the objects that you can get from me, and here's all the different endpoints. So it's a very self-describing service. Microsoft implemented the RESTful API using that spec, but again, as I said, there's one or two little things that aren't conforming exactly to the spec, so you can't say it's an OData service, but it's you might as well just treat it that way. So OData and SharePoint, all endpoints are canonical URLs. What that means is that we have an absolute URL that's going to point to either a collection or an entity set, as we talk about in the OData spec, or an item, they call it, those entities. Sometimes we can have multiple paths that lead to the same thing. And I talked about this earlier where we had two different URLs that would give me the same SharePoint list. As you see there, there's one that says get a list by a specific GUID. That GUID you replace with a real GUID. And then the other one would be get by title. Those are called, those are operators, right, to go get those things out. One of the nice things is that all the URLs and responses that come back from a RESTful service, they're all self-describing. So if there's any relationships, we'll see those added to the top of the response that we get back. So for example, if I go get a SharePoint list, at the top it'll tell me if you add a /items to the URL, then you can get all the items with this list. Or if you add a /permissions, you can get all the permissions to it, things like that. So now let's take a minute and let's kind of switch over and look at the REST API and a couple supported data formats that we have and how we can interact with SharePoint. This is very much one of those religious battles of like the C# and the VB.NET guys. There's no right or wrong answer here. Everybody's got their reasons for this. There's pros and cons to each. You pick and choose whichever one you like. First one I'm going to talk about is XML. So this is the standard response type that you're going to get. If you're in the browser, we'll see this in a minute, you plug in a URL to a RESTful service, that's going to give you back XML. What it does is the specific MIME type that's going to come back is application /atom+XML. That's what the accept header would be in your HTTP request. This is typically going to be a fairly large payload, at least when you compare it to the other option I'll get to in a minute. We can use this to both submit data to SharePoint, to the service. We can also use it to get data back. And it's generally the default way that the data is going to be sent and received unless you tell it otherwise. You also have client-side and server-side SDKs that you can use to help parse and construct these different things that you're going to want to send and receive back from the API if you're using XML. So like if you're on the server side, you can use like the link to XML to be in the XDoc object to parse those documents, or you can serialize them in another way. And there's a bunch of different options there. And we have client-side options too for parsing XML. Nothing special. You don't need anything special for REST. You just need an XML parser. The other data type that's becoming a lot more popular is something called JSON. It stands for JavaScript Object Notation, and it's a much more condensed option. Now, the one that we shipped that Microsoft supported out of the box was application /JSON and then semicolon OData equals verbose. That is still a very condensed payload when you compare it to an XML-based payload. There are a few other options that you can actually use now in Office 365 that SharePoint supports, to where you can say, give me a minified version. You can say, give me a version with no metadata. There's a couple different options. And if you do a quick little search on the Office blogs site for the JSON responses, you'll see the different options that are available to you there and some comparisons. The OData V3 protocol, it supports the JSON verbose format. The OData V4 protocol, though, is going to support both the JSON Lite and the minimal metadata one. That you can use. So both of those would be supported in the new version. Again, it's typically a much smaller payload than XML. And just like XML, we can use it to submit and receive data. And then you can have different parsers to parse the data or to construct it or send it along, both on the client and the server. And to those respects, it's all the same with XML. It just really depends on what you want to use to build it up. For the demos that I'm going to run, I do everything for the most part with JavaScript or for the JavaScript object notation, especially if I'm doing any development. If I'm looking at the services and the responses, I'm going to use a lot of XML here, and that's generally how you will see it for the first few ones that we'll take a look at. So how do we control the data that's being sent to the service? And then how do we control the response that comes back? Effectively, how do I tell it what's coming and how to deal with it? And how do I tell the service what I want to get back? Well, there's two ways you do it. First, when you're sending data to the service, we're going to use a header in our HTTP request called content type. It's content-type. Now, when you want XML, you're going to put application/Atom+XML. You saw this on the last one of the last slides. If you want JSON, then you put application/JSON ; OData=verbose. And you need to put the whole thing there. Be careful not to include an extra little semicolon on the end of either one of these. You can string a bunch of them along, a bunch of different content types along if you want, and separate them by semicolons. But you don't. If you only have one there, you want to make sure the last one doesn't have a trailing semicolon. That can cause issues. When you want to get the data back and you want to tell SharePoint, here's how I want you to give it back to me, you either say with an accept header in your HTTP request, either application/Atom+XML or application/JSON + a semicolon ; OData=verbose. And you're going to control the data responses coming back that way. Okay? Now, let's figure out how we can get data out of our SharePoint REST services. This is fairly straightforward and not too bad. So, how do we do this? Well, the way we're going to do this is with an HTTP GET. That's the verb that we're going to use is a GET. We're going to have a couple things here. You're going to want to always do a GET. You're going to want to always pass along the endpoint, the URL, of what you're trying to get, either an entity set, like a collection, or a specific entity. Then you're going to include a bunch of different headers for different things. You may want to tell it that I'm only interested in getting data back as JSON. You're going to have to tell it some sort of thing about the authentication. We're going to have to do authentication here to be able to authenticate back over to SharePoint, and either using some sort of a cookie authentication, or if we're using OAuth, then we want to use a bearer token that we're going to pass along as well, an access token that's passed across as a bearer token. Now, once you do that, you want to control the query, and you're going to do all control of the query all on the URL, and you're going to really just do it all in the query string. There's a couple different common operators that you're going to want to use here, and these are all defined by the OData spec. There's a lot more to it. There's a lot more options, and there's a lot of examples. I'd recommend you look at the odata.org website, specifically go to the V3 specification and look at all the URL conventions, and you'll see a ton of stuff there. But these ones I show on the slide here are the most common ones. So for example, if I go get a list of data, and it's going to give me all the fields on the items I'm looking for, but if I only want specific fields to come back and slim down that payload, I'm going to use $:= and then a comma delimited list of all the fields that I want. If I want to sort things, I'm going to put a $:orderby on the URL, and I'm going to list out the fields and how I want them sorted. If I want to filter, well, there's a lot of options on the filtering, but let's just say two common ones. Let's say I'm looking for a company named Contoso. Then I would say $:filter = field name, in this case company name, space EQ for equals, space, and then in single quotes, Contoso. You're going to want to escape that too, URL and scaping, and put the %20s and stuff in there for the spaces, but there's utilities and stuff to do that. A little more advanced option is the second one I've listed there, where I say let's filter but only look for a substring and find any company name where the first two characters of the string are equal to CO. And so that's another option. There's things about looking at uppercase and lowercase and all those different things. You can even do some math formulas and stuff in that filter. It's pretty cool stuff. There's a lot of options there, but we won't dive into every single permutation here. So let's take a look at querying some data. We're going to do it first, doing through the browser and looking at it with Fiddler, and then I'm going to switch over and we'll show you a JavaScript example. So I'm going to switch over to my virtual machine here. And what I have is I have a SharePoint site right here, and if I come over to our, let's come over to our site contents, let's create a custom list and add a few little things to it. So I'm going to add a new app here. I'm going to create a custom list. And we'll just call this our sample data. And down here, if I go to my sample data list, I'll come in and let's put this list into a little table edit form, and I'm going to switch over and we'll change this text value over here to add a new column here for region. And then I'll just add a few things here, like a couple states. So how about Washington? This is in the West. And then we have Florida. That's obviously in the East. And then we have Texas. It's a big state that basically takes up the South. And then how about Montana? And we'll just put that up in the North area. So just really simple, just got a few little bit of sample data here. So let's go switch over and let's look at the REST API. What I'm going to do is up here in the URL, I'm going to find the last little bit of the URL here, and I'm going to just put on underscore API, and then I'm going to hit slash web and see the data coming back from my SharePoint list.
Or not.
Or not. Doesn't support the feed format. Here's a common little thing. Let's switch over to the internet options, and I think over here with our feed settings,
there you go.
We can say turn off the feed reading view.
Right, so people have to do that because the browser wants to show that as a news feed and not as an actual XML document. But once you get it turned off, then the XML will come back. So now that you got that, let's take a look at it.
I got that all done, and before I do that, it's going to make me log in again. So let's come back over here, and we'll go back to our site. Let's not go straight to the URL here because we need to log in first, and we've got a whole bunch of URL fun that I'm having here. Demo gods are having fun with us today. Jack, train01.onmicrosoft.com. Okay, and now let's plug that URL in. And now let's get our data back.
There
we go. And hey, look at that. Let's change some of the zoom on here because that's pretty tough to read for these eyes. Now, this looks like a mess at first, right? I think when you look at it, it's like, whoa, it's a lot of XML. But let's just look at what it's telling us. At the very top here, you've got an ID and it's saying, here are the endpoints you're going to. Now, all of these link references here, these are things saying that, hey, if you throw on a web/titles on this piece right here onto your URL, this is going to give you a bunch of information that you can go to. So it's giving you a bunch of options of things you can see. And if we come down, you'll see here, I've even got a section here for all of my lists. So let's make sure that we can all see that really good here. Oh boy, that's big. Okay, so there we go. So we've got go over here to our href web/lists, okay? So let's do that. Let's come over here to our web and I'll go to lists. Now I go here. And this is going to give me back a bunch of information as well, but if I look at it, you see I can find here on this first list, it shows this list right here has a GUID, there's his unique ID. So what this is, if I'm just going to shrink up a few of these different things here, each one of these entries is a separate list inside of our SharePoint site. And so I have a bunch of different entries, a whole collection of things coming back, and each one of these has some attributes associated with it. There's his unique ID to get to him on this GUID piece. If I scroll down a little bit farther past all these links, you'll find the properties. So underneath content, there's our properties. And if I scroll a bit farther, we'll find the title for this list is the converted forms. Now, that's kind of tough to read this stuff. So there's a couple different ways that we can find the different lists here. Our list that we created a second ago, let's go back and just see what list that was called again. I think I've called it sample data. Is that right?
Sounds right.
Oh, we're real big screen there. So there we go, sample data. So we'll come over here, and inside this, in the URL, let's give ourselves a little bit of room so we can look at the full URL. I'm gonna put slash get by title, and then put in quotes, sample data. And that's gonna give me a reference to, if I scroll down, just my sample data, and you can see that's the list of everything that's coming back. My scroll bar's all the way down at the bottom. So I got a much smaller payload. And if I come up to the top here, let's just show one more thing here. If I want to just see just that title property, let me show you I can use these operators. I showed you those different operators with a dollar prefix to them. The way you do that is you're going to put those on the query string. So I'm going to create a query string here by throwing a question mark on the end, and I'll say dollar select equals title. Let's get the title field, and what else do we want to get? Let's grab another one. How about the ID? Or how about the hidden field? I'll grab those two fields. Now you can see my response is now a lot more manageable. I'm not getting a lot of stuff coming back, and I'm controlling the amount of stuff that's coming back using this interface here. All right, so this is really useful. Now, if I switch back over, let me open up a tool here called Fiddler. Let me grab, I'm going to grab this URL real quick. Let's come over here to Fiddler. And what I'm going to do is let me come over here and let's refresh this request. Let Fiddler trap him. So here he is. Now, in Fiddler, this is just a way, this is a free tool that's available on the internet. Just go to, just do a search for Fiddler, you'll find it. What it's going to do is it's basically an HTTP debugging proxy. And so it's going to look at every HTTP request that goes out. It's going to track it. And when a response comes back, it's going to show me that response. So here I'm using this inspectors tab. And at the top here, it's showing me the request. And at the bottom, it's going to show me the response. So if I look at the raw request of the raw HTTP request, it's a get. Here's that URL that we made. There's my get by title with select sample data. Here's the select title and hidden. Come back over, we can see I have an accept header of give me anything, and that's giving me back XML or Atom XML because that's the default. If I look at the raw response, here's all the headers that are coming back, and then there's the raw XML, and then I have a nice little XML tab here that'll actually parse the XML and show me the response. But that's not the way I want to do it. I'm going to come over here to the Composer tab, and I'm going to switch this guy over. I'm going to grab my session from over here, drag him into the Composer tab, let him recreate this. I'm going to get rid of all of this stuff, okay? And then I'm going to issue this same request. So if I come over here and hit execute, it's going to make that same request. And you can see I got the exact same, you can see it's the same response because it's just the same data size. Let's switch this over and control the data type that comes back to say I don't want it to come back as XML. I want application slash JSON semicolon OData equals verbose. This time when I run this guy and I hit execute, what you'll see is a significantly smaller payload because if I go back to the inspector and look at the response that came back, look at the raw response, this last little line here is JSON data that's coming back. And let's switch this over. Let me turn the word wrapping on for this. You can see the amount of data that came back in this list. If you compare that to the one we just did a second ago when we were getting XML back, and scroll down, what you'll see here is a significantly bigger response, right? It's about three times the size of the other response. So JSON's gonna be a much smaller payload, something you may wanna consider. Using Fiddler to go through and to work with these queries and stuff and to test your queries out, I definitely would consider this like a core development skill that you would definitely wanna do.
It's really the best way to learn the REST API is to be in Fiddler and play around with it and see the results that you're getting back, as well as to debug. Because, you know, really, Andrew, what it all comes down to is if you get the URI correct, then your REST query is going to work.
Yeah. And then you're just writing all the different queries of how you're going to make the thing work, getting the data back, and parsing the stuff that comes back. Really, really useful. You got a lot of control over it. All right, so let me switch over here and let me show you a little demo here of getting some data back from SharePoint, and then we'll spend a little bit of time looking at some of the other data, and I'm going to have to switch back into the slides in just a second. So this is what I'm showing you here in this project here. This is a very simple SharePoint hosted app. So if I go back over to my site real quick, and let's zoom this out a little bit. If I come over here to my REST client side demo, this is the code I'm going to show you in just a second. What this does is this is a SharePoint hosted app. It's in an app web, and there's a list behind the scenes that contains a list of Microsoft CEOs. So if I click on this refresh list button, what it's going to do is it's going to show me three different CEOs. One of them obviously didn't really have much of a tenure. John Doe didn't stick around for very long. So we have two other ones that are listed here, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer. Now, how am I getting this data back from SharePoint? Well, if I come back over here into Visual Studio, what I have here is that if I first look at our default.aspx, let me just show you what the HTML looks like. Here I've got my buttons listed up here at the very top, and then down here I just simply have a sample little HTML table. Now, in order to try and to keep it the JavaScript as simple as possible inside of this demo and so we could focus on the REST programming, I used a third-party library to kind of help with the data binding. It's an open source library that's out there. It's very popular and was written by a Microsoft employee called Knockout. But essentially what it does, it allows me to do a little bit of data binding. If you're familiar with the MVVM pattern, that's what's going on here. You don't really need to understand it to get this demo. So if you see some like magic, how are you writing out the HTML? That's what's happening here. We're gonna have a collection of chief executives, and for each one that it finds in our collection, it's gonna write out a new table row and write their title out to this field right here, and then write their tenure start year out to this span, and write their tenure end year out to this span right here. Nothing fancy. So, and then I've also attached a couple little click handlers too, to some functions to actually get these things to work. So all of our logic is gonna happen here inside this app.js file. So let me go run over to this guy. Now, what we're doing is we're creating this thing called a view model, and the view model is basically our object that it, once this view model has been created, at the very bottom of this code here, I'm simply going to take that view model and bind it to the entire page, and that's how we're getting that magical data binding and data all the data showing up and creating the new SharePoint list. Again, we're not gonna dwell on the knockout piece of it. Let's just focus on how we're getting data back. We have this collection here called Chief Executives. And as I add people to, as I add chief executives to this collection, they're gonna get added to our table. Here is a function that I have here called get all chief executives, and it maps to this internal function here called get all chief executives. So here's some JavaScript code that's actually going and getting the data back from our SharePoint list using the REST API. What I've done here is I'm creating the query using this endpoint. So here on line 25, I'm using an object that's on every SharePoint page called the underscore SP page context info, which has a wealth of information about the current page you're on, including the absolute URL of the current site that you're in. What I did is I then added on the underscore API slash web slash lists, and then I told it to go find the CEO list where all of our CEOs are being stored. I then put on this slash item. So once I got to the list, if I put slash items, that gives me all of the items inside of that list. If I just stopped right here, I'm getting the actual list object. Here, I'm getting all the collection of things inside that list. Then on the query string, I'm saying, let's just get the title field, the tenure start year, and the tenure end year, and sort them by the tenure start year. And by default, that's sorting in ascending order. I then created a little JavaScript object called the request header, saying I'm only interested in getting this data back as JSON. And then what I'm going to use is the jQuery AJAX function to simply issue a request to this endpoint. It is an HTTP GET. Here are the headers that we're passing along. And once you get the response back, clear out the collection of chief executives we currently have, and then go take the response of data that we get back, response.d.results. Those are all the CEOs that we got back from our list. Add them to this observable, pretty much an observable array. That knockout is going to watch that observable array, and it will update the UI for me as it sees that.
So, Andrew, if I want to program against the SharePoint REST API, I really just use exactly the same jQuery skills that I use against any REST API. It's not really any different at all.
No, and in fact, if when you're looking at this, you can't really tell that this is a SharePoint thing that we're talking to. This is just plain old JavaScript making a simple call. So it's anybody that's has done REST programming and jQuery or anything with JavaScript like that and have done these requests, it's a piece of cake to go grab the data. I mean, it's the same thing you're used to doing.
And that's what, and that's why we love REST.
And that's right? Why we love REST.
It's the same thing.
It's so, standards based.
Right. So if you've done it somewhere else, you can do it in SharePoint easily.
Exactly. Let me jump back to the slides and let's talk a little bit now. Let's talk a little bit now about creating, updating, and deleting data with the RESTful services. Actually, I'm clicking too fast on my slides here. Oh, PowerPoint didn't like the fact that I was clicking so fast on them. Let's not do it that way. Let's go with this. This is always fun. This is funny. It's great when the demo works and PowerPoint fails you, right? How many times has that happened?
This is not a PowerPoint course. Just trying to be clear on that. We don't know anything about PowerPoint.
You said
we can't
Office.
Do anything with PowerPoint.
That was Office 365 MVP and SharePoint MVP. We need a PowerPoint MVP somewhere around here. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about creating and updating data. Well, before we do that, right, we got to talk about this thing called the form digest or the security digest or just the digest. It's got so many names in the same product, who knows what it really is. Maybe it's even the request digest. So what is this? There's a thing on there's a thing on the internet called the replay attack. And it effectively it says that if you go to a website where you had to log in and there was a cookie that was involved and you're still logged in and someone sends you an email and you click on something in the email, you could run some script that could automatically behind the scenes issue an HTTP request to go back to that same e-commerce site, put stuff in the shopping cart, submit the purchase, make the change on the shipping address, make the purchase, and poof, all is good. You never saw your browser change, but you were logged in, and so the cookie was sent because you were still logged into that machine.
And that's because the browser will automatically send cookies to the site when it, on, in each request.
Exactly. Yeah, if the browser is visible or not, it will always do that.
Yep.
So what Microsoft has done is they followed a similar concept that what everybody else, a lot of other e-commerce sites on the internet have done. And in SharePoint, we have this thing called the Security Digest. And essentially, it just says that with the, there's a value in the cookie and there's going to be a hidden value in the form. And those two values have to match. You got to be able to see that stuff. If it's not there, it basically just says you can't do a replay attack without seeing what's going on.
Yeah, it's a standard anti-forgery token that our ASP.NET or MVC developers already use.
Yep, exactly. Well, because they've done that, what Microsoft has done is that every single non-HTTP request requires we send along this digest token. The digest is good for 30 minutes. And in order to get the digest token, there's two ways of doing it. If you're on a SharePoint page, there is a hidden form field called the underscore underscore request digest where you can get that value out. Or if you're not on the SharePoint page and you're somewhere else, like you're on an application that's running on, like, say, a phone that's interfacing with SharePoint, you can issue an HTTP post to the REST endpoint underscore slash underscore API slash context info to get that digest back. So you're going to have to get the digest. Once you get it, you're then going to put it in the header as a header value of X dash request digest. And you'll see that when I do the other demos in a minute. Okay, so let's look at the create and the update and the delete pieces here, and then we'll dive in some demos and see how to do this. And then we'll also look how to do it server side. So I'm gonna wanna submit, if I wanna do any kind of creation, I've gotta submit the request as an HTTP post. The endpoint of where I'm going to is gonna point to the collection where the item is gonna be created. So I'm gonna point to the list slash items if I'm creating an item in a list. I don't wanna point to a specific list item because that's a totally different thing that you'll see in a second. The body of the request that I'm going to send across is going to contain either an XML formatted or JSON formatted representation of the data that I need to send over to the service. I'm going to also need to include a couple additional headings in the header for the HTTP request. Specifically, I need to pass across a content type to tell it the data format that I'm using to send to SharePoint. I'm going to need to pass in the content length. That's going to be the size of the payload that I'm sending across, and that's pretty easy to get. You just do a dot length on what you've created and then put that in the header value. And then and that one's optional. That you don't have to always put that one in. And then the last one is the X-dash request digest, and that's the one you're going to have to include on every non-get request. Assuming things went all fine, SharePoint will respond with an HTTP status code of 201, which basically just says, hey, it was successful to create it, and it gives you back the entity that you just created, and however you set up what your accept header was. Okay? What about updating it? Well, think a lot of the same things are true as it was with create, but there's something else you got to keep in mind here. Now, with HTTP, originally there was not support for an HTTP verb called patch. So what patch does is it says, if you give me just if you give me an object to update an existing entity and you've only given me five of the fields and there's really like seven fields on that entity in SharePoint, what patch does is it says, I will only update those five items and I'll leave the other two alone. But if you submit an HTTP post to the same thing, if you exclude those two other fields, it'll null those fields out because apparently you didn't pass them along, so you passed null values, so you intended to null them out, right? Well, that's never what we really want to do.
Can't believe that would be true.
But that's the way it acts. So there's a way around that. Some like reverse proxies and some different proxies and clients don't support HTTP patch. So a way around that is you can send it as a post, and then in the header you put an XHTTP method equal to merge, and you would do so. That's you would use that with a post if the patch option isn't available. So you would do that one option if you want to be like fail safe for everything. Again, the endpoint of the request is the thing that you want to update. So not the list item collection, but the list item itself. The body of the request contains the actual object you want to update with all the new fields. And then you also want to pass across, just like creating things, you want to pass across the content type and the request digest. Assuming everything goes well, you say HTTP status of 200. A couple other things too, is that when you're updating stuff, you should always include something called an if match header. Now, every object that comes back from SharePoint is going to have something called an e-tag. Think of that as a version number, and it means absolutely nothing as far as in the UI where you can turn major, minor versioning on a SharePoint list. That has no impact on this at all. Every time you make a change to an item in SharePoint, its e-tag increments by one. What this does is it says, I'm sending a request over to SharePoint. I'm saying, I want you to update item number 5, and I want you to update it with this new item. But I only want you to update it if you're still on version 4. Because if you've been changed since I last got it, and you're now version 5 or 6, then I'm sending you data to update based on old values. So if you include if match equals 4, and it's not valid, and the current version on the server is like 5 or 6, SharePoint's going to respond with something called an HTTP status of 419, which says precondition failed. That's just something you're going to want to look at the e-tags that come back. And that's with every single response that comes back from SharePoint, it'll include the e-tag that's in there. Okay?
Yeah, standard concurrency model.
Exactly, right? Yeah. You should do it. There's a way that you can not do it. You can put a star in the if match. You're basically turning it off, and that's not a good idea. That's a very bad idea. Last thing, let's talk about deletes before I show the demos. So here, I'm going to submit a request as a delete. The endpoint of the request is the entity that's going to be deleted. And just like the create and update, I'm going to pass across the content type, and I'm going to pass across the content length. But those actually, in fact, those are not required because I'm not sending any data. I'm just sending an endpoint with an HTTP status of delete. I do have to pass across the request digest, though. And at the very last thing, I say, if it's success, I get a 200 back. Okay? So let's take a look at what the create and the updating and the delete stuff is going to look like. So I'm going to switch back over here to my demo. And let's go down here to the function here called adding a third CEO. So how do we create a new person here? So now what I've done is there's a couple of extra JavaScript that's going on here because after I'm going to submit two HTTP requests, one is going to say go create an item. And then the second one says once you've created it, let's go re-get all of those CEOs again so we have a current list. But before I do that, if I'm adding a third CEO to the company, I really need to stop the tenure of the existing CEO. So I really have three things I have to do. I have to update the existing CEO, I have to add in the new CEO, and then I have to get a list of all the CEOs to update my page. So I want to make sure that those requests, though, happen in sequence. And so what I'm doing is I'm creating this little array here called jobs. And so I'm going to create four different AJAX queries, and I'm going to put them in this collection. And I'm going to use a little open source promise library here that's going to allow me to go through and to run these in succession. So let's first look at how to update the CEO. So what I'm going to do here, and I'm using, this is just classic demo code. I'm going to assume that the last person in my CEO collection is the one that needs to be updated to say his tenure is over, because I sorted those in ascending order based on their start date. Obviously, you might want to be a little bit more careful with how you do this in your code, but it's demo code. We're just trying to prove a point here. Remember, it's an update. So a few things we're going to need to set here. I need to set the accept header. The data you give me back, I want JSON. The data I'm going to send you, that's JSON. The request digest, I'm going to pull that out of a hidden form field using jQuery that's currently on the page. We're going to do an HTTP method of merge because I'm going to assume that patch is not available to me. And then the last thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to say, let's go find, in our collection of chief executives, let's go find the current one that we're going to update, and let's look at his property called underscore underscore metadata dot e-tag. That's the version of the current CEO in the SharePoint list. Now, let's go through and let's take the CEO that we're going to want to update. I have to tell it what kind of data this is, and this is coming back as part of the response, but I'm going to say, I'm going to create a metadata object. And I'm going to say the type of this guy is a sp.data.ceo list item. And then this data type right here, this can get a little confusing here. This is the, you'll always see this when you do a get. So you'll always see the stuff come back. This piece right here, why what the reason it looks a little weird is because list item is always added at the end. And remember, our list is called CEO list. So that's why it looks like there's, that's why there's two words, the word list in there twice. We're going to say the 10-year end year for this CEO is 2014. And then we're going to build up the Ajax query, and we're going to add it to our little array of jobs. So I'm going to say you're going to first call this endpoint, which we defined up here at the top, which we defined up here at the top here. So there's the endpoint of the actual that specific CEO. We're issuing a post with these headers. I'm going to take this object I created and use this function json.stringify to take that object and create it as a JSON formatted string. And then when you succeed, I'll just pop open an alert saying the second CEO has been updated. Now, after we've gone through, we've retired the existing CEO through JavaScript. It's not that easy.
Sometimes they don't go easily.
They don't go easily. There's these things called parachutes and stuff that they like. But anyway, we have this thing here. The next one we're going to do is we're going to create the new CEO. So here we're going to create a new CEO. We're going to point to the collection of CEOs in our list. Again, we're going to create the new request headers. We saw how to get the data a minute ago. This is how we're creating it. So we have an accept header. We have a content type. We're sending a JSON. We have a request digest. Here's the third CEO we're going to create. We are going to hire Satya Nadella. His tenure started in 2014, and he's still the CEO today. No breaking news or anything. I'm not about to go there. And then we're going to create a new Ajax query here to say, here is our, here's the request that we're making. There's the endpoint. We're making a post. Then we have a bunch of, here's all the headers again. Same thing. Here's the data. And then when that succeeds, write out the third CEO has been created for Microsoft. And then finally, we'll come down here at the bottom and I'll say, Q, that's my open source library. When all of these jobs have completed, then, so basically go update and then go create, then go call the function, get all chief executives. And we saw that earlier on how to go through and get that. Last but not least, how do I delete a CEO? That first guy, John Doe, dummy CEO. He was not a real CEO. So let's go delete that dummy record. Again, we're going to go assume that he's the first one in our collection. Again, dangerous thing, demo code, don't do as I do, just do as I say. We'll grab his endpoint, and I'm going to say, if match is equal to anything, I don't care what version the guy is, we want to get rid of him. So I'm going to delete this guy. The difference here, there's the delete right there. And when you're done, I say, first person's been deleted. Once he's been deleted again, go run all those jobs again. When they finish, come down here, say get all the chief executives. So there we've seen how to go through and to do this stuff. If I come over and run the demo real quick, go back over here to my browser. So we've got our list of CEOs right here. Let's appoint the third CEO. We should see two alerts pop up. First one, the second CEO was updated. The third CEO was created. Once I click off of both of these alerts, it'll release control back to our JavaScript closure, and it'll call our refresh list, the function that's backed by our refresh list, so that we should see, there we go. CEO has been updated. And we want to get rid of John Doe, so I click on delete first person, and John Doe has now been deleted. So we can see everything worked exactly as desired. Okay?
Looks great.
All right, so let me jump back to the slides briefly. Actually, before I jump back to the slides, let me show you one other little thing here. In my code, I have another little demo here, and this is showing you how to do a very similar thing or the exact same thing, but this is done using server-side code. So this is a SharePoint provider-hosted app, and it's going to use managed code, but it's still going to use the REST API to get all the work done. Now, we're not going to run this one just in the interest of time, but this demo that you see here, as well as the one that I just showed a second ago, are both available as hands-on labs in the github.com/officedevtrainingcontent repository, where you'll find all of the labs and slides and demos and code that we're going through in this module for this course, as well as the other courses for Office Dev. I have a CEO controller right here, and there's nothing really interesting about this controller. It's just using this thing called a chief executive repository. Come over here to the chief executive repository, and let's take a look at this guy. So what do I have here? In this case here, we're getting all the chief executives. So I'm doing basically the exact same process of going through and creating the request, right, for going to the right endpoint, creating an HTTP client to go make the request. I want to get the data back as JSON. I had to do a little bit of authentication because I'm coming outside of SharePoint. So I had obtained, using the SharePoint context, I obtained an access token. So I'm going to inject that into my request header. But now this is the one part I want you to take note of here. This is interesting, a cool little concept here, is that instead of working with XML on the server, we're going to work with JavaScript on the server. And I'm going to do it using a open source project called JSON.net. It's very popular. A lot of Microsoft products even use it. So what this does is I'm going to go back and get the response of my request and get the string back that came back, which is all JSON. Now, this function right here requires a little bit of explanation, or this line requires a little bit of explanation of how I got this. But basically what I'm doing, let me explain what it does first. I'm calling JSON convert, and this is coming from JSON.net. But what this guy is going to do is I'm going to call deserialize object. The object that I want you to deserialize it as is this collection, and I'm going to hand you this string. And so now my SPJSON response is really just a strongly typed collection of data that I'm going to get back. So how did I get that? Well, there's a couple different ways of doing it. What you have to do is you have to define this object right here. And the way I did that is if I come over here and I look at this SP Chief Executive JSON, if I open this up, what this is, this file is a code representation of what my JavaScript response, my JSON response looks like when I get it back from my RESTful service. So I have two different top level pieces. I either going to get a collection of responses or I'm going to get a single response. So you can see here, one of them that I'm always going to get, the top level thing is going to be D that comes back in the JSON response. Remember that D is coming back. That's in Fiddler. Look at all these requests I've been making. Let's come back to the very first one and let's look at the JSON response. See that D right there. That's the first D that we're going up against. If I come back over here to Visual Studio, so there's D. I just said, let's call data because it makes a heck of a lot more sense to call things data instead of doing like coming over here and saying response.d. whatever, right?
Yeah, data looks good.
Yep.
Easy to understand.
And you can change the names of this right here with the whole JSON property and stuff. So one of them is a collection. One of them is a single item. If it's a collection, you get a data collection response, which this is just an array of these different, the results is just an array of this SP Chief Executive JSON. You see here, if it's a single guy, then I don't have an array. But the real trick here is now this class and this class are code representations of the JSON that came back. How do you do that? Looks kind of hard. Now watch this. If you right click on this guy and let's add in a new class, and I really don't care what the name of this guy is. Let me go back over here and let me find some JSON that came back from a request that we made. Let's see which one do we did. There's a delete, so that one looks good. JSON, let's get the raw. I will come down here. Let's get all of this as a sample response. I will copy this out. If I come back over here to Visual Studio, and let's get rid of this class, what I can do is I can say edit, paste special, paste JSON as classes, and then poof, I get my metadata representation, and I get my result representation. You can see that I took this and I doctored it up a bit to make it easier for me to use. Piece of cake, easy
peasy. That's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Makes it simple.
That's Visual Studio making your life easier right there.
Exactly.
That's good stuff.
Exactly. All right, so with that, I know I've kind of gone on a bit here with about the REST API and everything here, but Scott, you want to tell them about a few resources about where they can learn some more stuff about how to get up to speed on
sure,
this stuff.
Sure, let's show them the resources and I'll talk about them a little bit. There we go. Okay, so we've got some resources you can use to go further. So for SharePoint, the REST API and samples are listed here. And then if you want to learn a little bit about OData, you can go to odata.org to learn more and look at the conventions there. Also, don't forget about the Office 365 Developer Center. That's really your place for all Office development, where you can find code samples and API references, lots of stuff that you need to get started. The Office blogs, great place to find out about not only what's going on, but also to get content from people that are blogging about these topics and useful examples. Also, check out the Office 365 roadmap, which tells you where we are and where we're going with Office 365, monthly updates and developer features in there as well. Great stuff. Patterns and Practices is a place that you can go to see actual problems getting solved. So get samples of actual problems getting solved, things that help you do common requested things like branding or site provisioning, that type of thing.
A lot of stuff that going from full trust code over to more of the app model code too. So it really helps people getting up to speed on that.
Right.
Stuff.
So if you're a classic SharePoint developer and you're trying to make this transition from classic full trust code into the new way of thinking, Patterns and Practices is a great place to see how to do that transition.
Yep.
Also, GitHub, we put all our code samples up there in GitHub. So GitHub is a great place not only for additional samples, but all of the materials for these courses are available in the GitHub repository as well. Check out www.github.com/officedev. And as we said, this is module number 3 in our larger set of modules for this course on building blocks and services of SharePoint platform. Check out the modules that come before and after if you're not watching these in series.
So to wrap it up here, what did we talk about? Well, we went to understand a little bit about REST and OData and how it fits into the SharePoint story today. REST is we looked at the different REST supported data types between XML and JSON. We learned how to query data, how to update data, how to create data, how to delete data. We learned the extra piece about the digest that you need, and also about a bunch of resources. And hopefully you picked up a few tips and tricks with Fiddler and serializing JavaScript on the server and stuff to make your life a little bit easier. Don't forget, check out dev.office.com. Should be your homepage for all Office stuff. It's got links to all the different resources that Scott was just talking about a minute ago. It's got links to where you can sign up for an Office 365 developer tenant to get up and running for free really quick, an API sandbox to play with the Office 365 APIs with a test tenant, so you don't have to write any code, get a project going, you do everything through the browser. It's a pretty cool little utility. And then how to get training, links to where to this video that you're watching right now. If you can't find it again, you got to watch this again. It's a great video. I think we did a fantastic job today.
I'm quite pleased with our
I'm sassy. I can keep going. Let's go another hour on this
one. You could go another hour. No problem.
It's REST. We can talk all day. But we need REST. So we're going to wrap this one up a little bit. Don't forget about giving your feedback. Microsoft's got a couple different ways of doing it with Office Dev. There's a Office 365 Yammer network that you can take a look at. Great place to interact with the product team. Stack Overflow, if your questions are tagged with MS-Office, fantastic place to get answers to questions and do research. And then if you got ideas for new features or feedback on existing features, go to officespdev.uservoice.com, submit your idea, get people to vote it up, and maybe your stuff, you'll actually have an impact on the product and not be part of a problem complaining about something, but part of the solution.
They're listening.
They're listening, exactly. Thank you very much. Other modules within this course will go into a bunch of other topics, including talking about CSOM. So thank you very much.